Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast, take three, along with Aaron Fitt. I'm John Manuel. We're going to get this one right. You guys don't know about the past ones. Now you do. We're going to talk about college baseball as we do every Monday. And, Aaron, one of the things that you've been doing this year with our coverage is blogging every Friday and Saturday night at the end of the week, those weekend days of games, and kind of catching everybody up on the highlights. And so if you come in Monday, if you're following what's going on the blog, you should have a pretty decent idea of what's going on when we do this podcast on Mondays. We're going to have to try to take it a little next level and really evaluate what's going on in every conference. So we're going to start off right at the top with the Southeastern Conference, Aaron, where those three teams at the top of the SEC East remain ensconced, three of our top four teams in the rankings. I think if you put a gun to our heads, Aaron, if you ask us what the best team in the country is, would we both still say Florida? I'd still say Florida.
I certainly would. I would have thought you'd take your national championship pick in the preseason, Vanderbilt.
Yeah, but Florida's been pretty impressive. I mean, they both have. Obviously, Vanderbilt hasn't lost a series. Those are two really, really good teams. And I think that this is no offense to the Sun Devils, but those top four teams are at another level for me with the rest of the country right now. Do you agree?
I do agree. I really do. I mean, I think those are the four most complete teams. You know, and I like all those teams. I think they have a little bit more reliable pitching than Arizona State. And, you know, Arizona State has pitched very well this year. You got to give them credit. To me, they're just not quite in the same class as the other teams on the mound.
Yeah, and that's to me, all those teams. And South Carolina was the lowest ranked of those teams in the preseason of the SEC trio. Obviously, I think we had Virginia a little bit lower. But just focusing on that SEC trio, South Carolina was the lowest ranked of those teams coming into the year. They had the most impressive series win with the win against the Gators down in the swamp. But they also had the most doubts about their pitching coming into the year, and they've really answered a lot of those. Just sticking with those teams real quick, Aaron, how about, first of all, you know, Michael Roth, who just continues to get it done on Friday nights for South Carolina, going head-to-head with Alex Meyer, a.k.a. Bubba. And Alex Meyer pitched pretty well for Kentucky this weekend. But Michael Roth, I think South Carolina, you know, I think every pro scout would take Alex Meyer over Michael Roth. But I think you and me and most college coaches would take Michael Roth over Alex Meyer in that matchup. And then, you know, Sonny Gray pitching like an ace and Hudson Randall pitching like an ace. I mean, all three of these teams have got a guy now that Randall's going on Fridays. I mean, that's just an amazing array of Friday starters and three different ways to get it done on Fridays for those three great teams.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, Sonny is the classic power pitcher, you know, 93, 96 with a, you know, power breaking ball, and just comes right at you with premium marquee stuff. And Randall's a ground ball guy, you know, a sinker ball guy who mixes four pitches very well. And he's just a competitive strike thrower who really gets it done. And it's good stuff, but it's not, you know, premium first round kind of stuff like Sonny has. And then you got Michael Roth, who's you know, a left-hander who kind of he can vary his arm slot a little bit if he needs to. He's developed, you know, two different breaking balls now. His velocity's gone up a little bit, and again, he's a dogged competitor like those other two guys are. And so, to me, the thing about South Carolina's pitching that stands out a little bit is the fact that after Roth, you know, they still haven't really stabilized their weekend rotation. I mean, they've had different guys every week now that Neff's been sidelined a little bit. The left-hander, and now they've got Colby Holmes stepping forward on Saturday and pitching well. Forrest Kumis comes back again on Sunday after spending 3 days in the hospital this week with an allergic reaction. He pitches well again for the second straight week. You know, so now coming into the year, it was three lefties. Maybe their top four or five starter options were lefties. Now all of a sudden they've got two righties in that rotation behind Roth. So it's still a fluid situation there, but their bullpen is so good. Their lineup is so good. Their defense is so good. And they have so many different arms that they can throw into those starting roles that they've just been able to roll right along.
Well, that's the amazing thing. I think it goes back to recruiting for South Carolina because Holmes and Kumas the last 2 years were two. Yeah, Kumas was the top high school arm in the state last year, if memory serves. And Holmes, if he wasn't the top high school arm 2 years before, he was one of them. He was in that mix. And those were both guys that, you know, they targeted as really important guys, guys they thought they could contribute, you know, step in on weekends early in their careers. And now they both have. And, you know, this is not by accident. They had, like you said, they had options and they had depth. And that's what's allowed them to do that. Same thing with kind of in a different way with Florida a little bit, Aaron, because, you know, their offense is has shaken out a little bit differently maybe than we thought it would. But they have so many different options offensively. You know, they don't have to. If Austin Maddox or Brian Johnson aren't carrying the offense offensively, which obviously they can, but they haven't all the time. But Mike Zunino has really stepped forward. He's had a tremendous junior season with this hitting streak he's had. And they've got other veterans there. You know, Josh Adams kind of bouncing back this year offensively. And it seems like the thing that, you know, all three of these teams have in common is they have plenty of options. They don't just have a plan A. Their plan B is as good as a lot of other teams' plan A.
Yeah, and Vanderbilt, too, is a team that, you know, really they've had guys emerge at the top of the lineup that have been really the key to their offense. I feel like Tony Kemp and Anthony Gomez, hitting 1 and 2 in that order, have caused all kinds of headaches for opponents. And, you know, those aren't the big-name guys on Vanderbilt. You know, they're not Westlake and Esposito and, you know, all these All-Americans that Vanderbilt has, but it's Kemp and Gomez who step forward. So, I mean, all three of these teams, and that's not taking anything away from Westlake and Esposito, who've had fine years, and Westlake has 6 home runs now, I think. But you know, the point is that all these teams are deep, and Virginia, right in between those two teams, is similar, but we'll talk about the ACC later.
Yeah, sticking with the Southeastern Conference, Aaron, the big series in the West was Arkansas at Alabama. The Razorbacks, the team that I think had higher expectations coming into the season, but still have not, after this weekend, still 0-3 in Southeastern Conference series. Not sure how that team would be a top 25 team. Well, for us, they're not. And then Alabama, 3 straight weekend series in Southeastern Conference play, really kind of taking a hold of the SEC West at 7-2, and doing it with basically a new crop of players from last year. Obviously, they have their two miniature players, Taylor Dugas and, of course, Nathan Kilcrease. I'm sure they get tired of being referred to that way, but I'm going to keep doing it. But Nathan Kilcrease is pretty amazing. I mean, 4-1, 180, 190 for the year. But talk a little bit about how Alabama's doing this, Aaron. And it seems like the more they do it, the more they legitimize themselves. I mean, they keep answering the doubters, is the way to put that. Not to use the word legit, but they're answering all the doubts every week more and more as they keep on winning.
I think that's true, and this is a team that I had a lot of doubts about coming into the season. I thought they were, you know, one of the two bottom teams in the SEC West. I thought coming into the year that you had 4 teams at the top that were pretty close, and then Alabama and Mississippi State, to me, were the bottom two. And the reason I thought that for Alabama was, you know, they lost their infield, and that was a really important group of players, offensively and defensively. You know, Josh Rutledge and Ross Wilson and Jake Smith and those guys really accomplished a lot in their careers, and I wasn't sure how Alabama was going to be able to replace those guys, but you know, they've done a really nice job with newcomers. Austin Smith at first base has provided some offense for them, you know, and so has their junior college transfer shortstop Jared Reeves. He's also played very good defense. You know, and I think it's a solid team up the middle. It's a very good defensive team as a whole, and they're very good on the mound. You know, they win a lot of games, 4-3, 5-3, you know, those kind of grind them out affairs, because they've got good pitching. You know, you talked about Kilcrease, Adam Morgan, and Tucker Holley make for a very solid weekend rotation. They've gotten an answer in the bullpen from Jonathan Smart, kind of a soft tossing lefty who's pitched very well for them. You know, it's a hard-nosed, you know, scrappy kind of team that kind of plays in Mitch Gaspard's style. And, you know, I'll be curious to see if they can sustain it, because when it comes to talent, you know, I don't think they're quite at the same level as certainly those SEC East juggernauts, or even necessarily LSU. But I do think they have really good college players. I think they're well coached, and we'll see how they do this weekend at Vanderbilt. I mean, I expect Vanderbilt to win that series, but it would be big if Alabama could at least avoid getting swept, and maybe they could steal that series. And with the way they're playing right now, they're playing with a lot of confidence.
Yeah, they're playing at the number one team in the country, but like you said, it really just takes – they specialize in playing these close games, and making fewer mistakes than the opponent has been a good formula for Alabama so far. Meanwhile, Arkansas, Aaron, it's going to be another showdown weekend for them next weekend. As long as you keep losing series, you better – at some point you got to start winning to get into the postseason. They're home to LSU next weekend, and they're home again against Mississippi State, so it's not like they're out of it. But if they don't win those two series – even though the schedule eases up a little bit, it remains fairly, you know, winnable at Kentucky, at Georgia. Those are not, you know, really outside of those top three teams in the SEC. The rest of them are all pretty comparable, at least in my mind. But this is not going to be an easy road for Arkansas to get to regionals if they don't start winning, because they did not play a great non-conference schedule. Do you think Arkansas can get its act together and get to regionals?
Yeah, I do, because like you said, when you look at the schedule, I think it opens up for them a little bit. You know, they've survived a little bit of a rough patch here, or I should say they've gone through a little bit of a rough patch, and you know, they haven't played particularly well. But two of those three series were on the road, and they didn't get swept in any of them. And then the other series, the home series, was against number one Vanderbilt, and it was, you know, a couple of 2-1 games and a 4-1 game, and they you know, won one of those games. So they haven't played poorly, you know, but really their offense has been a little disappointing. I thought this was going to be a pretty good offensive team, and they've struggled to score some runs lately. They only scored 10 runs in three games this weekend, and the weekend before that it was, you know, I think 4 runs in 3 games. So, you know, that seems to be the problem. Now this is going to be one of the more explosive offenses in the conference after seeing him down at San Diego State and you know, talking with Coach Van Horn about him. Their personnel is very talented, and their pitching looks more unsettled on paper. You know, they've actually pitched better than they've hit lately. So we'll see if that changes it against LSU this weekend. That's a big series for both of those teams, because LSU is still just 3-6 in the conference, even though they're the only they're the highest ranked of the SEC West teams in our rankings at number 17. They won a big series this weekend against Ole Miss, but both those teams really need that series, I think.
And I think talking about LSU, Aaron, it's kind of amazing that as good as Carson Whitson has been, he really hasn't been the best freshman pitcher in the SEC. That's been Kurt McCune. I mean, Kurt McCune is a lifesaver for LSU. Yeah. He's just been outstanding on Friday nights for the Tigers all year. My question for that team is, do they have enough help for Mikey Matuk? Because Mikey Matuk is just putting up kind of sick numbers this year, new bats or not. Is there enough help for him in that lineup? Because it doesn't seem like that's been a lineup that's been as explosive maybe as I think we thought it could be this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not the kind of powerhouse offense that maybe you're used to seeing from LSU. It's much more based around athleticism, and you know, they've got good speed in the lineup, but Trey Watkins might be the fastest guy in the lineup, and he struggled to get on base. So that's a guy that they need more from, I think. You know, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know how great this offense is after Matuk. It's nice that you've got you know, the guy who maybe is the top hitter in the country right now at this point in the season, is the centerpiece to your lineup. But you know, they've got some question marks after that. There's no question about it. And also on the mound, you know, you've seen Kevin Gossman now run into a little bit of a speed bump as their Saturday starter, another freshman. He's had short outings the last 2 weeks, and all of a sudden you look up and his ERA is 5.59, and you're thinking, right, what's going on with this guy? So, you know, that's a team that you know, I think has some things to sort out still. I mean, it's a big series on the road against Arkansas. You know, LSU can't really afford to fall further behind. I mean, they had to scrap and grind to win a series this weekend against Ole Miss, but they did. And, you know, I think it's going to be a very interesting race in the SEC West, you know, like we've talked about.
For what it's worth, 22,000 fans at those two games on Friday and Saturday for LSU. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Wow.
I mean, give it up for LSU. I mean, just give it up. Those are amazing, amazing college baseball fans. Aaron, we've got a question on Twitter. I got one at John Manuel BA. You're at Aaron Fitt. Transitions us to the ACC. We mentioned Virginia. The Cavaliers are 28-2. They lead the nation in wins and winning percentage. Nipping at their heels, easy for me to say, is North Carolina at 26-4, coming off a sweep of Clemson. And Mojo Dev 1 wants to know, what is behind Mike Fox doing a constant merry-go-round with relief pitchers at North Carolina? It seems like guys keep going a third of an inning every game. Aaron, I saw them a little bit this weekend. The reason they couldn't on Saturday, the reason he kept on using different relief pitchers was that none of them would throw strikes, especially in the eighth inning. None of them wanted to throw strikes. As Clemson rallied, but then North Carolina, you know, held them off offensively. I think they scored 4 runs in the bottom of the eighth. And then on Sunday, I think, again, it was kind of a whole staff approach. But I think you and I both agree North Carolina has really exceeded expectations this year. And this is tied for the best start in North Carolina history. Not even their teams that went to 4 straight College World Series. I think only one of those teams went 26-4 to start a season. And it's still really kind of – they almost have a better record than this, because it's baffling they lost that series at Wake Forest, which has been a scraptacular team this year. I mean, not a very talented team, but a Wake Forest team that has some surprising wins, winning a series against North Carolina. They scrapped against NC State and got a win. Didn't they win a game against Florida State as well? Kind of surprising that Wake Forest has done that. But North Carolina, I think, better than anybody thought. And now they're going to Florida State on the road. What do we expect out of the Tar Heels at Florida State? Do they have the pitching and the bullpen depth to go on the road and beat the Seminoles in a series?
Well, the bullpen depth is a strength of this team, and you know, I think that's a big reason that Mike Fox has used so many pitchers, is he's got a lot of options, and he can mix and match now in a way that maybe he couldn't in the past. I mean, it'll drive you crazy going to a game and watching, you know, all those pitching changes, but you know, he knows his personnel, and you know, I think they're still maybe trying to figure out a little bit, you know, at the back of the bullpen. I mean, it seems like Cody Penny maybe is the guy that they trust the most back there, but they also like Greg Holt. He's obviously a veteran guy who's kind of been a moment of truth guy for them. But yeah, I mean, I think North Carolina is a very solid team overall, and a pleasant surprise. There's no question they're a surprise. I mean, I think even Mike Fox is surprised. You know, he said as much last week when I spoke with him.
And the crazy thing, Aaron, is that yesterday or this weekend, you know, when they needed and they couldn't get outs in the eighth inning, they brought Michael Morin in out of the bullpen in the eighth inning when Penny and Holt had faltered. And it seems like Holt is the guy they trust most in multiple inning outings. And when you saw them in the first weekend of the series, he went two innings on back-to-back days, correct?
I believe that's right, yes.
And then, so he seems like he's their multiple innings guy. I mean, he's pitched 16 games, pitched 25 innings. So they like to use him. But then Sunday, in a tight game, in a closer game, I believe it was a tie game at the time, in either the seventh or eighth inning, they went to Tate Parrish and Andrew Smith, a pair of freshmen. So it really seems like the governing factor for North Carolina is righty-lefty, not necessarily experience, not here's our moment, this is one moment of truth guy. I do think that they like Holt and Penny best, but it doesn't seem like they are going to shy away from anybody, whether it's Shane Taylor or R.C. Orlin or you know, anybody in their back of their bullpen, and that they need to use Michael Morin in the bullpen, they're going to do it because they've moved Kent Emanuel into the weekend rotation. Patrick Johnson as a really nice senior right-hander, kind of doing a little bit of an Adam Warren impersonation. I'm not going to give him Adam Warren credit yet because he hasn't gone like 11-0, but he's 6-0. And then, you know, they just got Chris Munnally kind of back on track this weekend, starting him Sunday. Meanwhile, Clemson, Aaron, a team that you and I have not agreed about for several years for whatever reason, and they're now 2-4 in weekend series. Does Clemson have a chance to miss regionals for the second time in 4 years? Or do you think the Tigers are going to right the ship here?
I do expect them to right the ship still. I mean, again, this is a team that has gone through probably the hardest part of its schedule already. And you're looking ahead, it's a home series against Maryland. It's at Boston College. It's home against Wake Forest. And then you're home against Georgia Tech. And, you know, if you're going to play Georgia Tech, you want it to be at home. And, you know, I think they have a chance to run off some wins here. I mean, that's said, you know, it's not as good of a Clemson team as you would have expected. I mean, they haven't been very good on the mound. They've been really bad defensively. I mean, this team's fielding 959, and it starts with John Hinson, who's got 11 errors. He's fielding 800. That's awful. You know, Jason Stoltz fielding 897. I mean, it's hard to win when you have consistent infield defense, especially now where every run is precious. You can't give away opportunities. And on the mound, I mean, Scott Weisman, their ace, has a 7.36 ERA. You know, it's pitching and defense. You got to do those things now more than ever, and Clemson hasn't. So I still like their offense. It hasn't been as explosive as I expected it to be, but I suspect they'll start scoring some more runs now as the schedule opens up.
And then at the top of the league, Virginia and Georgia Tech, both 11-1. Georgia Tech takes its first defeat of the season at Duke. A little bit of an upset there, but we have UVA at Georgia Tech next weekend, Aaron. I mean, how good is that? As good as it's going to get in the ACC this year?
It's a good one. You know, obviously it's a great series. It seems at this point that those four top teams, UVA, Georgia Tech, UNC, and Florida State, are all in pretty good shape to host regionals. And you know, Tech and North Carolina are the two teams that maybe we didn't expect to be in that mix heading into the year because. You know, in Tech's case, as we've talked about all year long, they're very young positionally, but their pitching is really good. You know, I've spoken with a couple of people who've had very high praise for that staff, comparing it historically to staffs they see in the ACC. It's amazing to me that the game that Duke won was Saturday when Jed Bradley was on the mound, on the All-American, and the potential top 10 pick. But, boy, that's going to be a great series this weekend. And the way UVA is playing, though, I think they're playing at as high a level as anybody in the country. They just destroyed Virginia Tech this weekend after throwing a perfect game on midweek against George Washington from Will Roberts. UVA is doing everything well. They're playing the game very, very well in all phases. It's going to be a great, great series.
Yeah, I agree with you as far as UVA's level of play. We're going to have to wrap up a little bit tighter this week than we have been in some past weeks. So let's hurry up over to the Pac-10 and the Big 12, Aaron. We're just going to stick with the big conferences this week. In the Pac-10, you know, the biggest series, it seems like on paper for me, was Oregon State and, Oregon, I guess, getting swept by Arizona State. Not good for the Ducks, who continue to not be able to put things together this year. And then staying in the state of Oregon, I don't know what state there, what their nickname is as a state, but sticking in that state, Oregon State getting pounded on Friday, but then rallying to win that series at Arizona. Let's talk a little bit about the Ducks and the Beavers. Can the Ducks rally? They have not. Talk about a team that's kind of been a disappointment. 14-12 overall. They just seem like they haven't quite. And they were supposed to be a pitching and defense team, but they just don't seem like they score enough runs. What's the answer going to be for Oregon?
Boy, yeah, they've been disappointing. I mean, at 14-12, all of a sudden, you know, they look like a bubble team. They're a team that has to get going fast because there's not a lot of, you know, margin for error in the Pac-10. Losing that series last week against Wichita. Actually, they split that series, I should say, at Wichita. Against Wichita at home, excuse me.
They still don't have a good series win, though, right now. They really don't.
That's right. That's right. I mean, their best series win might be, you know, BYU, which isn't really a regional team at this point. I mean, maybe, but Oregon's been a disappointment. It's a team that we expected a lot from, and you know, they've had a little bit of trouble getting some of their big name arms going. You know, I spoke with Andrew Checkitz, the pitching coach, a couple of weeks ago about what's wrong with Scott McGuff, and you know, Scott McGuff, their closer, has shown great stuff this year, and he's just not quite been able to put it all together and get outs as consistently as he has in the past. His stuff's been even better than before. You know, so he's a guy that they need to get back on track. They have gotten good pitching from Tyler Anderson and Madison Bohr for the most part this year. Those guys have been very, very good. But like you said, offensively, I mean, it's back to what it was 2 years ago. They're hitting .229 as a team. It's just, you know, we expected them to be more physical this year with some of the new guys that they brought in. Certainly they've missed Stefan Cibol. I mean, right. You know, his injury has hurt. He got off to a good start and then he got hurt, you know, and I think he's back now actually, but
he's only got 20 at bats. I mean, that guy, yeah. Between Cibol, Caressa, and Ryan Healy, we thought they were going to have three new impact bats. Well, Cibol, like you said, has been banged up, only has 20 at-bats. Healy only has 32 at-bats, hasn't really been a factor, and Caressa's hitting .197. And then Jack Martyr, who was their big freshman a couple years ago, is hitting .200. So they just haven't gotten going offensively. The guys who we thought they would kind of build their offense around, Cerna, you know, a top-of-the-order kind of table setter, Martyr, Caressa, Cibol, Healy, none of these guys are really having good years. So, those are the guys who were supposed to be the reason that they would be, instead of a scrappy, just enough offense, to being a good offense. So, like you said, I mean, when your closer's struggling a little bit, and your offense is not kind of performing the way that you thought it would, that leads you to 14-12.
And I'll throw one more thing out there. You know, we thought Oregon would be one of those teams that would be really good and benefit from the new bats because they're pitching a defense and manufacture runs. But, you know, I talked with Terry Rooney last week about the UCF's team, and he still believes it's important to build your team around these strong physical guys. You know, even if they're just college physical guys, not necessarily pro power guys, you have to have strength to hit with these bats. And maybe Oregon just doesn't have enough strength in their lineup. It might just be something as simple as that.
Yeah, that's as good an explanation as I've heard, Aaron. And then Oregon State, the O-State ballers, yes, they ballin'. You know, Mitch Canham, I believe, would be proud of his club. I mean, he would be happy with any team that bounces back from getting pounded on Friday night like they did at Arizona. To come back and win that series, And things do not get easier for them. I'm just looking at their schedule. At home against Arizona State, at Stanford, home to Washington State, really the only series in this stretch where they're going to be favored, at UCLA, home to Cal. First off, we got to talk about Cal, but second, let's finish talking about Oregon State. What are the Beavers doing right to put them, get them back up to 19th in our rankings?
Well, you know, for one thing, they show a lot of resilience this weekend after getting pounded on Friday, making five errors, and you know, they had their ace Sam Gavilio on the hill and gave up six unearned runs, 10 runs overall. You don't see that coming. A lot of teams might have been shell shocked, but Oregon State, I think, has shown that it's a resilient group, and they came back on Saturday. They swung the bats well. They actually got some power. You know, a couple of 3-run homers. Josh Osich continued to pitch well for them. I mean, I think this is a pretty good pitching team. And unlike Oregon, you know, they've actually hit some. You know, they've had guys take those big steps forward, like Andrew Sam talked about, and Danny Hayes is a really good hitter. And you know, Carter Bell had a nice weekend. I mean, I think they could be a similar team to Oregon, except their guys have performed. I mean, it's that simple. They've hit and Oregon hasn't. So that's why they are where they are.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah, they're similar teams, only they've performed better. They've done better. I think you're right as far as their talent level goes. Real quickly, Aaron, Conference USA, the big news there, Southern Miss going on the road to Central Florida, which had been playing very well, sweeping a series. Golden Eagles seem like that's a conference still sorting itself out. You got Rice trying to get back on its feet, Tulane that's been really floored by these injuries, Central Florida trying to get over that hump, but really seems like Southern Miss is the team that's put itself forward. Outside of a series loss to Troy, it's really been a great year for the Golden Eagles.
Yeah, it really has, and you know, that's a team I think we talked about them last week. I mean, I like their veterans on that team. You know, the seniors like Todd McGinnis and Colin Cargill bookending that pitching staff. Bea Valmuth had a really big year. Mark Bourgeois had a huge weekend for them. You know, he's another senior guy, physical DH type in the middle there. This was a little bit of a statement week for Southern Miss, I think. You know, winning a midweek game against Ole Miss and then sweeping a road series against the UCF team that was really hot and had just won a road series of its own against Rice. I think USM kind of made a statement and showed that it might very well be the team to beat this year in Conference USA. And you know, I still, like I said, I still believe in Rice. And until, you know, someone else actually knocks Rice off at the end of the year, I'm still going to take Rice. But Southern Miss is right there with them. And right now looks like the best team out there in that league.
And then in the Big 12, pretty much chalk. Oklahoma's gotten back on its feet. You've got Texas playing a little bit better, you know, still Texas. They're still going to win a lot of close games. They are who they are. Texas A&M pitching very well. I guess the big statement this week was Oklahoma State in back-to-back weeks. First, they come into our rankings, but they've won series against Texas and now at Nebraska. They have the series loss against Kansas, but really Oklahoma State kind of taking that step forward and trying to get back into regionals after the really bottoming out last year. And with Coach Frank Anderson, I think it's safe to say that if you don't win in the Big 12 in baseball, you don't stick around. He needed to win this year, and what's been the key for that team turning things around and getting back on a winning track as a program?
Well, for one thing, they pitched a lot better. You know, the weekend rotation has been very strong. Brad Probst in particular has been a revelation for them. You know, Mike Strong, the lefty, is a guy that we'd like to come into the year after a good summer in the Northwoods League. He's pitched pretty well in general. He didn't pitch great this week, but you know, Randy McCurry came in and gave him four strong innings of relief. He's a power arm guy to anchor that bullpen back there. And then they've got the great freshman lefty, Andrew Haney, who again didn't pitch well this weekend, only two innings, but in general has pitched well. So I like this team on the mound quite a bit, and they've hit. You know, I mean, and they really hit this weekend. That was actually the key at Nebraska was their bats. You know, especially Davis Duran and Mark Ginther, these upperclassmen, really swung the bats well, hit for some power, hit some doubles. You know, it's a team that's got a little bit of home run pop up and down the lineup. They use the gaps well. You know, I think they've got some experience in that lineup. I mean, I think it's a team that I had as kind of a borderline regional team coming to the year, right there, you know, with Nebraska, maybe Kansas State, as kind of teams that you could see sneaking into regionals, depending on how things went. And right now, it looks like they're on track.
You know, Aaron, this year, I should say, my NCAA tournament bracket, I tried to use age and experience was going to be my that was my tiebreaker in games. I was going to go with a more experienced team because I just thought that it was a wide open field. I was going to go with the experienced clubs. Of course, I still didn't pick Butler, which is ridiculous. But it seems like what you're saying is for the bat, there's a common theme here with the bats. The older, more physical, stronger teams are the teams that adjust to these bats better, and that makes sense. I mean, that's who adjusts well to wood. You have to have strength to swing with wood. If these are bats that perform more like wood, it would make sense that if you have more strength in your hands and forearms, you're going to hit a guy like a Nick Martini, who you're getting ready to talk to from Kansas State. Was he reached base in 87 consecutive games? Is that what I thought I read on
that's
your Twitter?
Right. 87. That's an NCAA record.
And he's not a guy who's a big, strong guy, but he does have strength in his hands and his wrists, forearms. He swings the bat. He swung the bat with authority since the day he got to Kansas State. So is that fair? Should teams, when they're filling out their brackets this year in college baseball, do the John Manuel, which didn't work in basketball? I picked Notre Dame, for crying out loud, because they were so old. But, I mean, would that work better in baseball with the more experienced, the older, more veteran clubs?
You know, quite possibly. It's, you know, at this point, it's such a new era in college baseball. It's really hard to know what's going to play in the postseason. I mean, I still think you put UCLA in a regional with Garrett Cole and Trevor Bauer and Adam Plutko, you're going to be pretty dangerous. You know, they might score 5 runs all weekend, but they might go 3-0. I mean, who knows at this point? I mean, I do think that having strength and experience in your lineup matters. I think we've learned that much, but pitching still matters too. And most of the teams in our top 10 are really good on the mound.
Last but not least, Aaron, what on earth are they doing at Cal? I mean, really, what on earth are they doing? How much do they have to string this process along, and how stupid does this process have to get before they just make a decision at Cal? I mean, I think everyone knows, if you're listening to this podcast, you believe that Cal should have a baseball team. I mean, hello, it's baseball or baseball America. But they've raised $9 million. It seems like the administration there has talked out of both sides of its mouth all the way along.
Brutal.
It is brutal. I mean, I guess what I'm wondering is has there been anything? You followed a little closer than I have. Are there any signs of concrete that if they raise this $1 million in the next 2 weeks, that they will keep their program for forever, or is it going to be for 4 to 5 years until the next time they get run down? I mean, what's your gut feel on Cal baseball's future?
I think they're going to find a way to get that last, you know, I think it's less than $1 million that they need. I think they had more than $9 million raised, and the chancellor, who has got to be just driving everybody crazy, told them, no, that's not enough. You need to get to $10 million. I mean, I don't want to go off on a tangent of this guy, but he seems like a piece of work, John. I'm just going to throw it out there. I mean,
hey, you're a California taxpayer, so you're paying his salary, so you can say whatever
that's right.
you want.
That's right, doggone it. Well, I'm tired of this guy, you know, it seems like he's just, you know, he's moving the target. He's jerking these guys around. You know, they've done almost everything he could possibly ask for. They've raised an incredible amount of funds in a short period of time, and it's never enough. It's disgusting, I think. But, you know, from what I've read, he's told them you've got 2 more weeks to get to $10 million, and that'll save you for, I don't know what the period is, 5 years or something like that. They need to be fully funded for the next 5 to 8 years, something like that. And then they need to, during that next period, come up with a plan for long-term sustainability. But, you know, the Save Cal baseball guys have worked really hard, and you know, reading the quotes, they sound really frustrated, as they should. I think they're almost there, and I do think they're going to get there. And once they save it, you know, you have to imagine hopefully the economy will pick up at some point in the next decade here, and I suspect they'll escape. They'll escape danger, kind of like Virginia did after they, you know, were in a similar position at the start of the start of this decade, last decade,
start,
John.
It was 10 years ago. It was 2001.
Yeah,
absolutely. No, it's a great parallel. Those schools have a lot of similarities, and I feel it's a great parallel. And here, 10 years later, UVA is number 2 in the country, leading the country in wins, and they've been to the College Series. And you know, Cal, you can do it too. So I'm hoping that the Jeff Kents and all those guys. I think a lot of the newer alumni have donated. I'm hoping – let's get Josh Satin to the big leagues or a couple of these other recent Cal alumni in the next 2 weeks so they can make larger pledges to keep this program going. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Every time I read the story, SMH, I'm just shaking my head. So on that fine Twitter note where I try to sound hip, we'll wrap this podcast up. Go talk to Nick Martini, Aaron, and we will be back next Monday with more college baseball talk. For Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next time on the Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.